Hey, everybody, this is Richard Deitch, and welcome to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. My guest this week is the popular host of TSN's extensive hockey coverage. He is James Duthie, one of the most popular sportscasters in Canada, a self-deprecating, funny, very talented guy, ego-free, much like Ernie Johnson in the States in that sense. And we will get into a conversation about Canadian sports media versus U.S. sports media, the impact of TSN losing hockey to Rogers, the return of Jay Onwright and Dan O'Toole to James's country, and then just some other stuff about his career. He's covered a lot of cool stuff and worked with a lot of cool people. I think I will finish by asking him whether the Toronto Maple Leafs will win a cup in the next 5 years. I'll be curious to see what James's thoughts are on that. A Canadian edition of the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. It's James Duthie of TSN. Okay, and as promised, we bring in James Duthie, the popular host.
How desperate did you get that you're now on to the Canadian cable boy?
We've had Canadians on. You know, James, you've thrown me off here. I'm great with one-take intros, and now I was going to get to that you are the popular host of TSN's extensive hockey coverage.
Well, that's accurate.
You host CFL playoff games. You host the Super Bowl for TSN, as well as the Masters. James Duthie, welcome to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
Thank you for having me, Richard. I still have no idea why, but thank you.
You were recommended to me from a man on the street, so I...
guy randomly shouted out my name to
you? And that man's name was Jay Onwright. I have no idea what he was doing here in New York.
Jay Adnan Virk. I think I have a couple of buddies.
Adnan Virk, if you were a restaurant, Adnan Virk would go there every night. Let's put it that way. He's a huge fan of yours and a former podcast guest. All right, let's start off with this, James. And this is something whenever I have a Canadian broadcaster on, it's a fascinating discussion with me. And I've had Bob McKenzie on, your colleague, Adnan Virk, mm-hmm. just mentioned Bob McCowan, the great voice of 590 in Toronto, Elliot
not
Friedman.
Not familiar with the station.
Yeah, so we've had a ton of them, and actually Onwright was on this as well. From your perspective, James, how would you describe the differences between the Canadian sports media and the United States sports media, understanding that you have only worked in Canada?
I think everything's smaller. The way I look at Canada to the U.S., it's kind of a 10-to-1 scale on everything. That's essentially what the population is, 10 times more in the States. There's more networks. There's bigger budgets, I would say, although that's not always the case. I remember I listened to when Jay was on. I don't think it's just money. There's high-paid guys in Canada. There's low-paid guys in the States. I think that's equaled out. Nobody here makes $8 million a year or anything, but I think it's just everything to scale. And I would also say that this is probably too much of a general statement. There's obviously exceptions all over the place, but maybe it's kinder and gentler a little bit. There's not as much yelling and screaming. I think that would probably be the most predominant thing if you were to come here. If you're an American and you come to Canada and watch a panel or watch one of the talk shows, not that there's that many on sports here, there's not as much crazy Skip Bayless, Stephen A. Smith going nuts, even though those programs do air in our country. Canadians usually aren't doing that as much, I would say.
James, this is a part of my podcast with Jay Onwright and Adnan Virk and others. I'm always interested in why they pursued media opportunities in the States. That is not something you've done. So how do you view people like Onwright and O'Toole who tried their hand in the States? And then secondly, why was that, or why has that not been something of interest for you?
Well, first of all, with the guys you mentioned, I think it was a massive Canadian mistake to let Adnan go. He really never got the opportunities he should have gotten here. When I started at TSN, Adnan was on what we call the row, which is one of the editorial assistants who was cutting highlights. And the fact that really, he never got to be on a sports network in Canada. I guess he went to the Score before he went to the States. But I think that was a big mistake on our part, and he's proving that every single day by how good he is. In Jay and Dan's case, I think that was just such a fantastic opportunity, the style of what they did. And as soon as I was shocked again that they were here that long and that the opportunities hadn't come earlier. So when they got it, it wasn't a surprise to me whatsoever. And it was an obvious to go do that, because I really thought they had a chance to conquer the States, and I'm still surprised it didn't happen. On my part, there's been occasions over the year. I was never, ever, this is not what motivated me ever. I think I grew up in Ottawa in suburbs, and I thought really small. I was never really ambitious. I wanted to be, it was sort of before the days of the big sports networks, and I just wanted to, I thought to myself, if I could be the local sports anchor in Ottawa and cover Ottawa Rough Rider games for a living, that would be as high as I could ever get on the planet. So maybe that was part of it, but I really like what I'm doing here. And the couple of occasions that have come up, just for whatever reason, it hasn't worked out. There's a couple of pretty good stories there that are, you'll probably get frustrated with me because I can't really tell all the details. They'll be better in my retirement biography or on my deathbed. But I did get a call. I haven't been pursued very much, Richard. I've never had an agent in the States or anything. I've never looked. But there was one network that over the years several times has approached me about different things. And one of them was just a ludicrous proposal. A very prominent, extremely prominent anchor left their job. I can't remember if he was fired or just was let go on a very prominent show down there. And they called me, and it was probably one guy who was like the second in command who liked me and said, I think I want you to do this job. And I said to myself, and I said out loud to him, you're nuts. Because if I went on this show, America would say, what the hell is this? Where did this guy come from? This goofy looking Canadian. And what is he doing on one of our most prominent shows in the States? And so I think by the end of the conversation, I'd almost talked him out of it. But that was one of the weirder conversations of my life.
It's interesting, though, and I'm not surprised, given your profile in Canada, that at least some people from the States would pursue you. One of the things that I think American audiences, certainly on the border, you know, the Buffaloes and the Detroits who get TSN or who make it a point to get TSN, they're very familiar with your work on the NHL draft or trade deadline shows. These are fascinating to me, particularly the draft coverage, which I think when I've seen you and your colleagues, the draft coverage is awesome. I mean, I think your coverage of the draft is the blueprint for how everybody in the States should do draft coverage. So this gets me into something I wanted to talk to you about, and that is how do you prepare for let's start with the NHL draft. We'll get to the trade deadline stuff. But how do you prepare for the NHL draft? I've talked to many of the broadcasters here who are in similar roles, the host role, Trey Wingo, Rich Eisen. But it almost strikes me that the NHL draft might even be harder because there are really some obscure people who are taken late. So how do you prepare?
Well, I think one of the gifts of being a host, I realized quite early in life I was probably too lazy to be a hardcore researcher / insider, whatever, like the Bob McKenzies of the world. And I think, to be fair, it's really Bob and Darren Drager and guys like that who have to do the hard work on the draft. Now, we lost the draft. TSN did a couple of years ago when we lost the rights.
And right.
Frankly, that was one of the more disappointing things. That was one of my favorite days of the year, because there's really no, it's one day when everybody's happy, right? There's nothing but 30 winners. I would sit on the stage and get to interview all the kids right after they got drafted. And it's not to be hokey, but it's really something to watch mothers crying in the crowd and to see these kids have their lifelong dreams come true. And you're the first one to talk to them 30 seconds after they've been drafted. That was really one of the best days of my hockey calendar. So I was disappointed to lose that. Most of my prep went into knowing the top 30, 35 players, figuring out smart questions to ask them. And that's really all I had to do. Whereas a guy like Bob, would have to know, you know, guys 100 deep. So if a guy was picked off the board, he would have to know. But we're fortunate enough at TSN to have a guy like Bob and a guy like Craig Button, who watches as much junior hockey as anybody, and Gord Miller, who would host that portion of it, and Pierre McGuire, who would come on. Those guys all know things inside and out. So I don't have the same pressure, I don't think, as, you know, Bob's the equivalent of Mel Kiper, like, who has to know everything. And as a host, you can almost cheat, I think, as a host. If you don't know something about somebody, you can kind of dance around it a little bit, where you can't do that as an analyst or as an insider.
Am I correct that maybe 2013 is the last year that you did the draft? You're still doing the trade deadline show, right?
We still go to the draft, by the way.
Okay.
It's funny. I'll tell you a funny story. NBC was kind enough. My son was looking for stuff in high school, going to university next year, and NBC hired him as an intern for the draft a couple of years ago in Buffalo. And his credential was better than mine because he was on the floor, and as a non-rights holder, I was not allowed on the floor. So I texted him at one point, and he said, "Dad, here, I'll get you down for a minute." So my 16-year-old son had to get me onto the draft floor. So that was kind of the saddest moment of my life.
I love that. The NHL trade deadline day is still obviously a big deal for TSN. Is it called Trade Center? Is that what you guys call it?
Correct.
Okay. So that obviously can be a crazy day if there's just a lot of movement. Is that how enjoyable a day is that for you? Because is that the closest thing you come to, like, just crazy live television and things happening left and right?
I've gone back and forth between loving it and hating it. It's mostly been hate throughout my life because this thing started, you know, I think it was Bob's idea way back in the day. And we used to, at first we just did updates long before I was at TSN, and then it became a 1-hour show and then a 2-hour show. And then suddenly it was Sportsnet came along and there was competition. And we started at 10, they started at 9, and we started at 8, and on it went until it became the colossal mess that it is now. You know, from a preparation standpoint, I used to prepare like it was my bar exam. I would prepare for months and have 100 pages worth of handwritten notes. And then I realized it was all useless because you never know what's going to happen and what. So I actually stopped preparing. So there's a good lesson for you journalism students out there. Less preparation is better, because I realized that I'm better on the fly, off the cuff. And second of all, you just never know. Besides knowing what teams want and what free agents are out there, which that just kind of seeps into your brain throughout the year. And that was a big relief. But I've hated the show only because it is the one show, certainly from a Canadian standpoint, that delivers less and less every year, but yet gets hyped more and more. And I don't lie to the audience about that. It's a joke that we're on for that long when so little happens. And there are trades that happen on Trade Center that, if they happened earlier in the year, they might get 10 seconds of copy on SportsCenter or a note on our website. And yet on Trade Center, we talk about them for half an hour or an hour. We had a trade one of the years. It's been really bad the last few years as GMs have kind of smartened up and done their dealings before the deadline. We had a trade a few years ago on one of the worst trade centers that was Maxim Sauvé for Rob Flick. That was the first trade of the day. It happened about 4 hours into our broadcast, two minor leaguers. And we got Rob Flick on the phone. And I believe my first question to him was, Rob, thank you for coming on the show. Who the hell are you? it's insane what we do, but it's become this Canadian thing. And, you know, also I think too, I'm not knocking off Americans here, the hardcore fans in America, but it's become this sort of weird Canadian holiday where I think our audience is smart enough to know that big trades usually don't happen anymore. But in the end, it's 10 to 20 guys sitting around talking about hockey for 10 or 12 hours. And I think that's fun. And I also think there's a bit of rubbernecking at an accident scene. Our ratings do spectacularly well every year on the show.
Right.
And I think a lot of it is because people like to watch us struggle. Well, like to see how we're going to fill all the dead air, which we now do often goofy skits, and we have silly things that happen. And I think that's part of the show, is it's kind of weird, cringeworthy comedy.
I saw a National Post story that said, you know, the peak audience of the show is 500,000 viewers. It averaged 200,000. I mean, that is a ton more, obviously, than you guys would normally do on a weekday. So, you know, you understand why it exists, because those numbers, at least in Canada, are phenomenal.
Right. And also, I think from a competitive standpoint, look, I'm not one of these guys who's crazy competitive with Sportsnet. A lot of the guys are friends. You know, it's such an incestuous business. We all know each other. And it's, I don't think there's another place where it's not quite like the States as far as, you know, the Ron Burgundy scene of people killing each other
right.
for ratings.
Anchorman, right.
But I would say on that day, it is, you know, particularly since the whole rights thing came down, it is the one day a year where it's a complete level playing field and that people have a legitimate choice. If you think about it, that's very rare in sports where a viewer just has a complete choice. Usually you're watching because of the quality of the game. If you're watching NBC because they have a better game, or if you're watching CBS on the weekend, it's because you prefer golf over what's on the other networks. Whereas for trade deadline, you're basically saying, am I going to watch these guys or these guys because I like their coverage? And we do really well on that day, and I think our network takes a lot of pride in that.
This is a very general question, James, but I'll ask it anyway. How did Rogers acquiring hockey change your job?
Well, you know, selfishly and myself, it's probably wasn't the worst thing to ever happen to me, because I never got into the business just to be a hockey broadcaster. I love hockey like everybody else, but that's not what I got in this to do. My first dream was actually to do football play-by-play, and I ended up being a news reporter for several years before I got into sports, but I still host a lot of hockey. We still have a ton of hockey games on our network. We have regional coverage of the Senators and the Leafs and the Jets, and I think there's another one on the way this year. We do the World Juniors, which is a massive event in Canada. We do the World Championships, et cetera, et cetera. So I still do as much hockey as I used to, but it also has freed me up to do other things, like you talked about off the top, to do more football and host some of the CFL playoff games and the Super Bowl and do the Masters. I love golf. I'd like to do all the majors, but some of it just interrupts my vacation in the summer now, and the hockey season's too long. But so it's really only changed what I do in the sense of that I get to do more and a variety of things. So I'll admit there's it still sucks sometimes. It sucks mostly in the playoffs when that used to be, you know, used to be killer because you're working every night, crazy hours for 60 days, and we still cover the playoffs for SportsCenter, but it's not the same as doing the game. So that's the one time I think it really bothers me. But hey, I've adapted, and TSN survived, and we're all doing well.
From knowing some people, obviously, in the market, they tell me that Gary Bettman really likes you. You have a good, if nothing else, working professional relationship with him. One, would you say that's accurate and correct? And two, I guess I would ask how that came about.
I guess that's true. I was pretty critical when the rights went down just because I was bitter. And loyalty's always been a very big thing to me. I think it's the one thing my parents instilled in me. And look, there's always loyalty always has its limits in this business. But I did not understand why they would turn their back on, you know, we took a lot of pride in the job we did at TSN, and I get it that money's everything, but it's still a head scratcher to me. And I told him that we did an event where I had to interview him, I think about 2 or 3 months after the rights thing went down. And we had about a half an hour backstage together, and I gave him a piece of my mind, frankly. And he tried to explain his side of it to me, and he told me he got me a big raise, so I should be happy. But you know what? I do respect the guy, I think, more than a lot of people do, because I know he's really, really smart. I don't see him hardly ever. I see him every year backstage at the Hockey Hall of Fame Awards, which I host, and I get to chat with him for 10 minutes then. I might see him at the Stanley Cup Final in passing. But again, it's not like the insiders who have to call on a regular basis and get information. I never do that. So I do think that for what his job is, he's got a difficult job because hockey fans want him to do what they want, and that is to, you know, especially in Canada, come into Canadian markets and forget about some of these southern markets that are failing in the States and things like that. And really all he is he's basically at the mercy of what all his owners want, and that's to make them as much money as possible. And I think he's done a very, very good job at doing that. So it's hard for me to be as critical as some about him. But I was certainly not close or anything, but I respect the man.
This this was a question that when I put out there that you were going to be on the podcast and opened it up to readers and listeners, there are a lot of forms of this question, and that was something to the effect of, has hockey reached a certain peak in terms of viewership interest in Canada, or in your opinion, is there still more room to grow in terms of bringing more eyeballs to watching, reading, listening to the sport?
I think it's probably peaked, and I think it's the same thing. I don't know that, you know, a big part of it is just the same stuff that you've been writing about so much, and the cord cutting and everything that's happened. I don't think that we're going to see audiences. For example, the World Juniors, I think the World Junior gold medal game 2015 when Connor McDavid was on Team Canada, I think we did 7.2 million average, which is ludicrous for a junior hockey tournament over the Christmas holidays for the gold medal game. And that was our all-time record. And I don't think that will ever be touched simply because the world is changing. I just can't see a situation where that many people will be watching a game like that on television again. Those numbers won't be seen. When we did the gold medal game, I was lucky enough to host at the Vancouver Olympics. I think the audience peaked at 20 million or something in a country of 35, which, and it averaged, I don't know, 14. So it's just ludicrous, insane numbers that, again, special events, but I don't think we'll ever see those again. As for the sort of the average hockey ratings, you know, I think they've stayed fairly level. Certainly, I think Rogers has had a really good year because of all the Canadian teams, but I can't see it ever really going up just because of, again, everything you've talked about. I just, the world, I look at my kids who just never watch. My kid's a big sports fan, but he never watches a game. He watches Snapchat stories and things like that. So I don't know how you're ever going to get the numbers that you've gotten in the past when that's happening.
One of the, you know, it's interesting to me in terms of where people come from often shapes them as a journalist or sportscaster, sports broadcaster, political writer, etc. You are from Ottawa, and in doing a little bit of research, your dad spent 35 years with the RCMP, which is the, I guess, am I right about this, the Royal Canadian Mountie Police?
Yeah, good Canadian stereotype. He's the guy with the hat. And the
right, right. So, so twofold there. How would growing up in Ottawa have shaped you as a broadcaster compared to, let's say, if you grew up in Toronto, or if we'll make it to the States, like if you grew up in New York?
I think there's a conservatism, maybe. Although if you've seen some of the goofy stuff I've done on television,
right.
I don't know where that comes from because I don't have a real good answer for that. But Ottawa is just one of those places which is very nice. You're just brought up to be nice and not make too many waves, and I guess I was like that. And as I told you, with my ambition, it was somewhat limited. So I don't know that there's a big difference. When from my travels across Canada, I tend to think Canadians are mostly the same. Toronto gets a bad rap as far as I grew up mostly in Ottawa and BC, and there's a lot of Toronto haters in both of those cities. You know, I've moved here, and I think people here are just as nice as most other places in the country. So I think it's more of a Canadian upbringing than anything else, more than an Ottawa upbringing, Richard. I don't know that that's made any different in my career, except I think it's more your again, not to be hokey, but it's more your family than your environment, and just to respect the people you work with and to treat your camera operators and your audio people and all that the same as the guy sitting next to you on the panel. Besides that, I don't know that I'm any different as a broadcaster than John Buccigross or Steve Levy or any of those guys that would have grown up differently in the States.
What growing up with a parent who is in law enforcement, how did that impact you?
Well, he was extremely strict. And it's ridiculous now. He's 86 and he's all the things I was terrified of my father growing up, and now I look at him and he's the nicest, sweetest, funniest guy around. So it was all a big lie. I've learned that. So he was strict, but I think not crazy strict or anything like that. And they were always saying you could be whatever you want to be. I was going to follow him, and I think he wanted me to follow him into the RCMP, and that was kind of always my backup plan. And then somewhere along the way, realized that I could might be able to talk on television and make a living out of it. But they were always really, really supportive. So it never really affected me.
Michael Farber, who's a longtime friend of mine, who obviously worked at Sports Illustrated and has worked with you.
Said, one of the best writers anywhere.
Yeah, said that, one, you have a fairly small ego for a television guy, which he likes. And he called you, and this is a big compliment, the most natural television person he's ever worked with. I wanted to get your response to that. That's an accomplished Canadian sports writing icon saying two very nice things about you.
Well, the ego I mask. So I'm glad that I fooled someone as intelligent as Mike. Yeah, I don't know. I think that one of the big things that I think really helped me and shaped me is that when I came out of journalism school, there were no jobs in sports. And so I was fortunate enough to get a job as a news reporter. And so I spent 7 years, on and off 7 years as a news reporter before I was able to get a job in sports. And besides make that, I think, really helping me journalistically to make me a better writer, make me be able to shape a story better, that it also gave me a real perspective on the place that sports has in the world. Whereas a lot of people that grow up and just go right into sports, through all the sports broadcasting schools that now exist, I don't think they maybe see that. And so when I got into sports, I really had a real good feel that sports should be an escape for people. And so I think that really loosened me up as to what I did, that I take it seriously, because I think fans take it seriously and they want you to take it seriously, but never to lose the fact that this is an escape and it should be entertaining for people. And so that's my best explanation for the fact that I try to treat it that way on air. So care, let people know you care. Take your preparation seriously, but never take it too seriously on air, and remember that it's not life and death. And I think maybe that's because of all that, that's the way I act.
I want to ask you about, you've probably, James, are aware of this, or you've hopefully read a little bit of it, but the sports centers in the States have changed dramatically over the last 24 to 36 months, mm-hmm. given that ESPN, and I think correctly so, understands that the destination for people at 11 o'clock of checking out all the highlights of the day is kind of an anachronism, in that you can get it on your phone. You're generally speaking well aware of a great play, so that they've now decided to really change what most of us grew up with for SportsCenter into very much more personality-driven shows. I don't know if that's going to work, but that's the decision they've sort of made. In your estimation and observation, where is the SportsCenter style show right now in Canada, and can the show in your country still remain more of a highlight driven program, even with personality driven hosts hosting that kind of program?
Okay, Richard, I'm gonna answer that question in 10 seconds. This is good podcast stuff here. My dogs are attacking a old lady across the street.
Maybe you should save that woman.
You can just hang on and listen for a second while I scream at them. And I think this will be, you don't get this from, hey, dogs, come on, come home. Sorry about that.
What are the dogs' names?
That's a soundbite you can use off the top of your headlines.
What are the dogs' names, though? Let's get some news.
This is Buddha and Willow. I have a French bulldog and a Boston Terrier, and they're a giant pain in the ass, and they terrorize the neighbors.
Buddha and Willow, W-I-L-L-O-W?
Yes, double I-L-L-O-W. Willow's the fat white one, and Buddha's the skinny black one. And now people are turning off your podcast, and I'm really sorry about this.
I'm not sure about that because, we're in a multicultural city here in New York, so we appreciate the relationship of these different dogs coming together.
Okay, so now I'm going to grab the dog so they no longer harass the neighbors. And sorry about that, folks. Okay. Okay, thank you. Sorry, Richard. What was the damn question again? Oh, yeah, SportsCenter.
Right.
Okay, so I think in general we're a little bit behind in Canada. I do think the highlight, I don't get the rating. We used to get the rating sent to us every day. They stopped doing that about a year ago. So I don't even know if our numbers are off in relation to the way they've dropped in the States. I think we're doing still fairly well. So in Canada, for your American listeners, it hasn't happened that much. Certainly there's more, they put more personality type segments into the show, but I don't think we've had anything yet like the Scott Van Pelt show or anything. Now, when Jay and Dan come back in the fall, that might be our first real foray into that, where SportsCenter will still run our normal highlight show. We have some fantastic anchors, Kate and Tash, and a whole bunch of others here. But Jay and Dan will have a show on, we have a bunch of different networks, just like ESPN. So Jay and Dan's show will run at the same time the SportsCenter is running. So if people just want your typical SportsCenter format, they can get it. If they want Jay and Dan doing their shtick along with some highlights, they can get that as well. So, and I expect Jay and Dan will do really well because of their following.
Yeah, that gets
much loved here. Yes.
Yeah, I want to get back to them. I want to ask you about that, obviously, because they're going to be your colleagues. You know them. Does the sojourn in Los Angeles impact at all, in your opinion, the Canadian viewer and how the Canadian viewer sees them? My guess is, just having spent some time in Canada and understanding their popularity, in a way, it could make them even more popular because they're sort of coming back home, right?
That happens a lot, I think, in our country, where there certainly used to be a thing where you hadn't really made it till you went to the States. I think that's gone a lot in our country, but certainly when broadcasters have gone and come back, you know, Keith Pelley, for example, who you know now runs the European Tour, was the head of Rogers when they got that hockey deal and used to be the head of TSN. He was at TSN, he was sort of a low editorial position, or maybe he was a producer, went to Fox where he produced some NFL Europe games and a few NFL games and came back and was senior vice president of TSN a year and a half later. So sometimes that happens where your status goes way up when you go to the States. I think Jay and Dan, I think they'll come back and pick up exactly where they left off. People love them when they left. They didn't stop loving them when they were gone, and I think they're really excited that they're coming back. Again, you know, ratings-wise, I don't know. Maybe you can never match what you had before simply only because of the cord cutting and all that that's going on, but I think they'll be as successful as they were before they left. I don't know. I don't think you can get bigger than, frankly, as you know, cable sportscasters, I don't know that you can get bigger than they were when they left here because they were huge.
Right. I mean, they were, I remember they posed with the former head of Canada, Stephen Harper. It might have been this big time, in my opinion.
He tweeted, I believe, on the day they left.
He did. Now, am I correct that, generally speaking, when they were at their heights, they had sort of the overnight shift? And so, depending on, you watch them late at night, or I guess if you woke up in the morning, you'd see them, right? That's how they became famous.
Yeah, and I don't know if this happened in the States, and maybe you can tell me, but I noticed a transition. When I started at TSN 98, and I did some SportsCenter, the big SportsCenter show back in the day was the 10 p.m., which I guess is probably what, you know, Dan and Keith did in the day at SportsCenter.
Yeah, 11 o'clock and, here, yeah, Eastern.
Yeah, so it started as 11 o'clock, then we moved it to 10 at some point in, you know, early 2000s. But basically, that was the show. And if you were going to work on the SportsCenter, that was the big show to get on. And I think that changed, and maybe Jay and Dan had a lot to do with that, but what we call the loop, the show that is taped at 1 a.m. or 2 a.m. at the end of the day, which used to be the shift that nobody wanted to go on because it wreaks havoc with your life and screws up everything. I think it sort of it would repeat from 6 a.m. basically all day. And I think, again, partly because of Jay and Dan and partly because viewers' habits changed and people, SportsCenter in the morning, I think, became the most popular show. And I think that sort of is the way it is today, that that the morning loop is probably the one people see more than any of the other shows.
All right, a couple more here and we'll sort of finish up with a listener questions. Part of your deal at TSN is you're doing or covering golf. So when you are covering, maybe covering is not the right word, or hosting coverage of the Masters or from the Masters? You're in Augusta or you're...
Yes.
Okay, right.
Yeah, so we do one thing we do that actually the States hasn't even been able to do yet, which we're pretty proud of. Augusta let us come on 4 hours before network coverage. We just pick up network coverage of CBS or whoever has it,
okay.
Or TNT now,
right.
In the early rounds. So we just pick that up. You don't see me there, but we do 4 hours of pre-coverage. You know, the Masters, it's available, I think, online in the States where you can see certain groups and Amen Corner and such.
Wow.
We do that all live on four different feeds, and I sort of bounce back and forth with my analysts between all those.
Are you the Jim Nance of this coverage? Is that the parallel?
Well, I don't really. I mean, I'll end up calling the odd shot just because I'm filling people in, but basically I'm just throwing to the feeds and the play-by-play guys that they supply.
It would be
a big stretch to call me the Jim Nance of this broadcast.
James, I want an American equivalent. Can you give me one? Jim McKay?
I'm the guy that comes on before Jim Nance. Maybe it's Bill, what is it, Bill Rafferty that intros the show, basically, and does, or Tirico now.
Tirico, you'd be sort of maybe closer to Tirico or something like that.
I guess I do Tirico-ish stuff at the beginning and the end of the show, maybe, I guess.
When you are at the Masters, do you intentionally, like, does your voice get in more hushed tones, and do you start, like, talking about flowers
I'm not capable of doing that. I actually mock that on the air, and I'm surprised at the Masters. I keep waiting to get that letter that says you're not allowed back that Gary McCord got many years
ago. Right,
because
they hate that. If you mock them, you're done, basically.
Okay, I shouldn't say I mock, but I'm unable to do some of the things that they demand that you do, put it that way.
Is there another...
I can't do it with a straight face. I just can't. I really think Nance is an unbelievable broadcaster. To me, to watch him do play-by-play on so many different events and do it almost flawlessly, the guy's unbelievable, but the whole hush tones at Augusta thing is...
It's a lot. Yeah.
I've never believed... This is a good topic for one of your future podcasts. You know how, I'm sure all the play-by-play guys, Al Michaels says he made up, do you believe in miracles? It just happened on this spot, and that Nance's lines just happen off the cuff. I don't believe that. Because the few limited play-by-play events I've done, I've always tried to come up with a line in advance, because you don't want to sound like an idiot and blow the one sound up that's going to be played for the next 10 years. And Nance's are always so good. You know, they're somewhat tweaked to the guy's career. There is no shot that he has not at least thought of that in the hour or an hour and a half before.
Yeah, I think if I remember, having talked to him many, many times, I believe he has admitted that. He will write out something. He's not somebody who's going to pretend that that's off the cuff. And again,
I don't believe, do you believe in miracles was off the cuff.
Yeah,
Al Michaels too, but I'm not buying that.
Yeah, same here. I think he wrote that out, or at least sort of had an idea of
what Richard, I did one championship game in my brief play-by-play career before they decided I should be a host, and it was the Canadian College Basketball Championship, which is not quite the NCAA tournament.
So, I mean,
just a slight notch below. Ravens are a dynasty.
One shining moment.
Yeah, so anyway, the team that was... the Huskies was the country, that the school that was winning the title. And so as they were coming down to the wire, I'm thinking, I got to think of something good. So I came up with my line, and the seconds rolled down, and I said, every dog has its day. Huskies, this one is yours. So I was kind of proud of myself. I thought I nailed it. And nobody said anything, of course. And then about 2 years ago, I was in a bar somewhere, and this dude comes up to me and gives me a big hug, and he repeats the line to me. And he said, I was at that school, and I'll never forget that line. And that basically was the greatest single moment of my career.
Your podcast is fairly recent, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
We're on episode 15 or something, and we've been knocking them off by weeks. So
right. So
I like to get to the game about 10 years after everybody else.
My point is, I feel like that call should be on the podcast. That should be like the sort of the tease call at the top, no?
I will do that. I will mention this interview on the podcast because I think podcasting is incestual as anything in the business. So
for sure.
Now,
it's a terrible job by me, and I'll make sure we re-edit it at the top. But the podcast is the Rubber Boots Podcast. Is that correct?
Yes. And
what is it exactly for our audience?
So this makes no sense. But when I was doing local TV in Ottawa, oh, my dogs are going crazy again. So I started doing local sports back in the day where there was no internet, no Twitter, anything like that. And people actually called the station to get scores. There was so little sports on TV back then. And so our number was in the phone book. Remember those?
I
and
do.
People would call me and I'd say, hey, CJOH Sports. And they'd say, hey, what's the score in the Cubs game? So one night I take this call and I pick up the phone. Hey, CJOH Sports. And the guy says, hey, how are you? And I'm like, good. He goes, you wearing your Wubba boots tonight? I said, pardon? He goes, are you wearing your Wubba boots tonight? I'm like, my rubber boots? Yeah. I said, buddy, do you want to score anything? Oh, no, I got one more question. Do you like the dunk tank? I said, what? The dunk tank at the fair. The dunk tank at the fair? Look, buddy, do you want to score? Just I hung up on the guy. And he phoned me the next night. Hey, are you wearing your Wubba boots tonight? I hung up on him for about 2 weeks, and then I got bored one night, and I said, hello, CJOH. You wearing your Wubba boots tonight? Yeah, actually I am. I'm wearing my blue ones. Oh, could you put them up on the desk for me? I said, sure, I'm going to put them up on the desk in the middle of my highlights tonight. And this started about a one-year relationship where he would call every night and I would go on and on with the guy. So I told this story, I believe, on the Jay and Dan podcast way back in the day. And ever since then, I've been tormented by dozens of people on Twitter every day who say to me, are you wearing your rubber boots? And so when I started the podcast, everyone on Twitter demanded that it be called the Rubber Boots Podcast. So that guy continues to haunt my life.
Wow. First of all, who are Lester McLean and Puffy?
So Lester is, we have a station called ESPN Classic at TSN, which basically runs old games.
Right.
Like ESPN Classic Canada, you know ESPN Classic in the States. And Lester is the producer of that station, so he just puts out all the old games. He's also an extremely talented musician. So basically he sits there with his guitar, and every time we come up with a new segment, Lester comes up with a theme song on the spot. Puffy is the guy, when we do the panel for hockey, Puffy is the key person, producer, who basically, if one of our analysts, Jeff O'Neill, Bob McKenzie, Darren Drager, says, I need highlights of this, Puffy's the guy that gets it done. He's, and also on the road, he's kind of our Mr. Wolf from Pulp Fiction. He's our fixer. So if Bob was to get angry and kill a guy down south, Puffy would be in charge of disposing of the body and taking the fall.
Here's one more podcast-related question. You need to explain to me why Roberto Luongo is essentially everybody's first or second podcast guest. Greg Brady and Carolyn Cameron, who are on Sportsnet 590, I'm sure, given everybody in Canada knows everybody,
yeah.
You know them. They started a podcast called Point Taken, and Luongo was the first guest. And now as I'm looking at the Rubber Boots podcast, I see Roberto Luongo. Was he your first show or second show? He's there.
Okay, so I have a long history with Roberto, and if there's hockey fans out there, you can YouTube. Roberto and I have done a series of sketches together, which are completely ludicrous, but he's got a fantastic personality, and he's a great guy. So I think in Canada, people know those things very well and know our relationship, and thus I thought he would be the perfect guest. I'm sure Carolyn and Greg just knew that he's a good guest and got him on, but I saw that on Twitter. I follow both Caroline and Greg on Twitter and saw that and sent Roberto a note saying exactly the same thing. What do you do every debut podcast in the business now? So
he's like Bill Murray or Steve Martin, like back in the old days when Carson
right.
or Letterman needed a number one guest.
That's right. He's the Bette Midler of the
Bette Midler.
Carson.
Very good. All right. We'll end with a couple of these things. I am not familiar with this. I apologize. Obviously, I would be if I lived in Canada, but
Richard, I don't expect you to know anything about Canada or me. So
yeah. So here's the thing. I should be asking you about the TSN quiz and John Tortorella's recalcitrance in what, answering questions or something? Or
so Torts, who again, for your maybe casual hockey fan listeners, is
they know. Listen, we know Tortorella here from New York.
Okay.
I mean, there was nothing more amusing than his post game interviews not answering questions.
Basically, what the TSN panel has been for the last 15 years that I've been doing it is a temp agency for coaches who are out of work. So basically, they get fired, they come on the panel for a while. Hopefully their name is out there and they get rehired. Torts came on the panel for about a four-month stint between getting fired by Tampa Bay and being hired by the New York Rangers, and he hated every bit of it. He hated being on television, and as a matter of fact, he had one of the great lines. He was sitting with Bob and I, we're eating pizza one night, a doubleheader, and he said, you know, guys, I love everything about this. I love hanging out with you, love eating pizza, watching the games. I just wish I could do it but not have to be on TV. I said, well, Torts, that's kind of why they're paying you. But anyway, Torts, the quiz is a weekly segment we have, which is very gimmicky, where basically we ask a bunch of questions, multiple choice questions. It's basically an excuse to do a panel and get the guys to cover a bunch of topics in 5 minutes. And Torts would basically steadfast refuse to answer questions. Just say, that's a dumb question, I'm not answering it. And it was great TV because everybody thought he hated me and that I had no time for him, and actually we're terrific friends, but it was fun television. And he would say the quiz sucks. And to this day, Torts will text me out of the blues sometimes, and just with three words, the quiz sucks. And he's right. I can't lie.
Yeah, man. No offense to John, but that guy wore out his welcome in New York pretty fast. Maybe as fast as Usain Bolt. All right. Here are the finals. In reading up on you, the slam dunk contest with Vince Carter in Oakland, maybe one of the greatest things you ever covered, or if nothing else, the most electric atmosphere in a sporting event you've ever been part of?
Yes. And I wrote about that in my book, a full chapter on it, because I was still fairly new to TSN. I think it was in my second year. And I will still say I've been fortunate enough to be at tons of Super Bowls and Stanley Cup Finals and things like that. I don't know if I've ever seen a crowd that charged, considering it's just a gimmick made-up event usually a fairly high corporate audience. It was insane in there. From the first dunk, I think the anticipation was huge, and then as soon as the first dunk happened, it just grew and grew and grew and grew. Story I always tell is my analyst was a guy named Brian Heaney, who played a little bit in the NBA, one of the most conservative, the opposite of Charles and Shaq, the most conservative analyst, very informative, but extremely conservative. And after, I think, the third dunk, he fell off his stool and was just we were in a suite. He was, like, writhing around the floor he couldn't stop laughing. He had this giggle fit because he had just never seen anything like it. And that's still in my top five things I've ever attended.
Do you believe that the United States hosting this year's World Junior Championships will help grow the game in the States, or can at least make that particular event more popular viewership-wise?
Probably not, sadly. It's my favorite event of the year, Richard. It's, as you know, probably the biggest event of the year in Canada over everything. But I think it's sort of a one-time deal. I've been waiting for it to grow in the States. I think hockey in general is a niche audience sport in the States. There's fantastic hockey fans pocketed around America, but I just don't think it's ever going to be football or baseball or even basketball. And the World Juniors is the same thing. I think there's chance for small bits of growth, but look at it was in Buffalo 6 years ago, and 90% of the fans are Canadian. That's why they always have it in border cities,
right?
Because they know the Canadian fans will cross over and sell it out. So, again, there's fantastic hockey fans in Buffalo, but I don't think suddenly the World Juniors is going to become a spectacle in the States just because it's in Buffalo this year.
I did watch it. I feel like I watched it on the NHL Network. It was incredible last year. It was thrilling hockey.
It's the best hockey you will see all year because there are mistakes.
Right.
They haven't all been they're not all playing systems. And so that's the greatest thing about teenagers, is that they have boundless skill and creativity, but they also make mistakes, and that's why you have these wild 6-5 games, and it's endlessly entertaining.
Two more. What's the one event that you really hope to cover prior to your sports broadcasting career is over, that you have not covered yet?
That I have not done yet?
Yeah, if there's anything out there. Maybe there's nothing out there.
Well, I mean, I think it would be the way I cover it. Like I said, when I got into the business, NFL play-by-play was probably my dream. Now, that's long gone. I don't expect it to ever happen. But so if you'd asked 16-year-old me that question, I would have said, you know, doing play-by-play for a Super Bowl. Now, I've been able to host our coverage of a handful of Super Bowls, and I think as far as dreams thought of and dreams attained, I'm happy that I got, you know, a 6 out of 10 on the scale.
All right, finally, we're going to keep this on the record, and I'm going to play it. Let's hope my podcast exists 5 years from now, and I will play it back. Will the Toronto Maple Leafs win a Stanley Cup in the next 5 years? Yes, no, and why?
5 years?
Within the next 5 years. 2022.
Yes.
Oh, I like it.
I just think that after stumbling and bumbling for a generation, that sometimes, like, a lot of things have to happen. You have to get the right people in place. They did that. Then you have to get lucky and, you know, draft certain guys that, like Nylander, that they got at, I think, 7, who ends up being a guy who could have been a first or second pick. I just think it's all coming together, and there's too many good pieces in place and too many good people in place running the show for them to screw it up. Now, the 5 years has me hesitate because that it's a crapshoot, as we all know. People get hurt. Things happen. Austin Matthews could hurt his knee and be gone and never be the same. But I would say that if I, you know, between Edmonton and Toronto, those would be the two teams, if you were going to, that I would have favorites as a Canadian winning. And I think a Canadian team will win the Cup in the next 5 years. So, yeah, I'll say why not.
I like it. All right. Here's my out, James. Let me know. Is it your professional ego-free host? So let me know how I do. James Duffy is the popular host of TSN's extensive hockey coverage. He also hosts the CFL playoffs on his network. He's fronted and hosted Super Bowls, the Masters, quiz shows with John Tortorella. And I would say
Rubber
that
Boots Podcast.
Rubber Boots Podcast. And I think it's very clear that Jay Onright and Dan O'Toole returned to Canada to try to take James Duffy's spot as the most popular sports broadcaster in the country. That's where I think the motivation is. And nothing
no,
else.
They're aware that ship has sailed.
We'll see. So we'll see
how. It's in my contract now that even if that's not the case, that I will be labeled as such.
You should have in your contract that only they can only address you one at a time. That they're not allowed to both be in the same room with you. So I feel like
exactly. And plus, there's two of them. So even if they're more popular than I am as a duo, which is likely to happen, I mean, you kind of have to split it in half. So if I'm half as popular as them, I kind of win, don't I?
Let me just say
51%.
Let me just say this, James. I could not have written more nice things about those guys in this country. So that tells you how powerful I am as a sports media writer, that they are now back in Canada, by the way. So that gives you an example of my pull here
in the
States.
No, but you were right. You were part of the minority that understood. And it really, frankly, pisses me off that they weren't more successful, because more than anything, they're my friends. And so you want to see your friends go down there and kick ass, only because they can get you maybe into more parties when you go down to things selfishly, and that never happened. And so now I'm angry at them and America.
Well, they'll be partying with Nickelback and other Toronto celebrities at this point. All right, James Duffy has been the guest. He's self-deprecating, but he is popular in the States, certainly among hockey fans, as my producer Lou Pellegrino and I, both hockey fans, can attest. James, I've wanted to have you on this podcast for a long time. And now we have done it, and I appreciate it. I wish you the best of success heading forward at TSN and with your two dogs as well.
Willow and Buddha, thank you. Richard, I appreciate it. I'm sorry, America, for those who don't know me. But it was fun, and I do appreciate the fact that you write about and care about Canada a little bit.
I do. And James, thank you very much for being on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
Okay, bud.
This is Sports Illustrated's Media Podcast with Richard Deitch.
All right, back in the studio. My thanks to James Duffy, the fine TSN sportscaster, works with my good friend and longtime colleague Michael Farber, who only said great things about him when I interviewed Farber to get some prep. The producer of this podcast, as always, is Lou Pellegrino. I thank him for his time. Previous podcasts, prior to James Duffy, Kevin Merida, the editor-in-chief of The Undefeated. We had a sports media roundtable with John Orand of Sports Business Daily and Jimmy Train of SI, Bob Lee and Jeremy Shapp, Royce Young of ESPN.com, Amy Trask of CBS Sports, as well as the new CEO of the 3-on-3 League, Kevin Harlan of Turner Sports, and many others. Please check the archives. We're now well into the hundreds of this podcast. It's the SI Media Podcast with Richard Deitch on Apple Podcasts. Sign up. Review. Anytime you leave a rating, it is huge for us, because that's how the podcast continues. For digital media, for Sports Illustrated, for Lou Pellegrino, this is Richard Deitch. We'll see you again on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
This has been a digital media production. Find your voice.
Do you know about the Locked On Podcast Network, the number one daily sports podcast network? Locked On has a daily podcast on every NBA and NFL team, plus a growing lineup of college and MLB teams. You get a daily bite-sized podcast giving you the latest on your team from the local experts. Lakers fans, search Locked On Lakers. Cowboys fans, search Locked On Cowboys. Just search Locked On, your favorite team, on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.